it's been a long way from Battle, which I know that's where you're from, to now. Yep. But you're very new here, and even when this interview eventually airs, you're going to be pretty new here. So can you just, for those who haven't learned the history of Kenya, can you give them kind of the one-minute version of how the band came to be?
Sure. Well, we're all very old friends. I mean, we've known each other all our lives, literally. We kind of, we used to hang out when we were young and play soccer and, you know, pass the time like you do when you're kids. And then eventually we got into music and we decided to start our own band. We were into bands, you know, like the Beatles and U2 and all that kind of thing. And we all moved to London in 1999. We started doing little shows at clubs around London and... you know, we used to be a guitar band, is one important point. And our guitarist eventually left, you know, after a couple of years. And, you know, then we ended up being this kind of weird piano, drums, voice.
It is very relevant when you say the originally a guitar band, because you're not a guitar band now.
No, we're a very odd lineup. But yeah, eventually we got a record deal, and you know, here we are, just trying to get heard.
And the rest is history. Okay, so you know, you read things on the website, but I know it's true that. The name is truly an old lady's name that was in South Africa. So tell that story, because that's, you know, people are going to think other, you know, when, number one, when you say it on the air, he's keen, and, you know, and we're going to make fun of that a little later, as you'll see, but, you know.
Yeah, she wasn't actually from South Africa. She was actually from where we grew up, down in Sussex. So we knew her when we were very, very young, and we all knew her, and she was...
She was like Mrs. Keen.
Yeah, her name was Cherry Keen, which is a pretty unusual name, you know, and we, I don't know, we just thought it had this kind of magical sort of fairy tale sound to it, you know, I don't know why, Cherry Keen, it's just a lovely name, and, you know, I think the fact she's one of those old ladies who kind of encourages you to follow your dreams and do music when, you know, and tells you you sound great even when you sound awful, and encourages you along, you know, it was just a little homage to her, I guess.
You need one of those in your life somewhere. Okay, so I kind of read that in secondary school, it was Michael Jackson in Tears for Fears. So what else? Tell me a little bit about, because you have it's not that you have a different sound, you do have a sound, you know, and I know you've probably heard this a million times, but you have a sound of another time brought up to today. So there's a lot of things that obviously kind of went into the musical brains that got you here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess there always are, really. Unless you're one of those bands who sort of deliberately are always kind of, you know, paying tribute to a particular era or a particular band, then I think you always have a kind of melting pot of influences. But I can remember when we started playing together, we were very into bands like the Beatles and U2 and Oasis, who were kind of coming out in the UK at that time. And, you know, we're all big fans of the Smiths. Nick Drake and Paul Simon, people who write great songs, basically.
Yeah, and that is something they have in common, especially, you know, when you get to the Nick Drakes and the Paul Simons, is that these are people who truly know the craft of writing a song versus, you know, finding a few chords and putting some lyrics to it. There is a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the way someone like Paul Simon writes is just staggering.
He goes through pain. I mean, I read an interview with him recently, and he it's painful for him to actually write songs. He doesn't like it.
I know. It's an extraordinary thing. He's such a craftsman, but to aspire to that kind of skill is something you have to do, and you know, you have to aim for the top, even if you never quite reach there. Real inspiration, great hero.
So originally, I read that you were kind of synth-based. Aren't you glad you've found room in the studio for the real thing? I mean, you are truly. There's not much synthesizer happening in the band.
No, I mean we use. I'm quite into synths, and we use. There's quite a lot of electronica on the record, but
right. It's
definitely takes a back seat to the live instrument.
It's used to kind of ameliorate the sound.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it was because when we started rehearsing, we wanted to play live. You know, when you're using a lot of synthesizers and kind of computery stuff, it's just all it's a bit too clinical and a bit too sterile. And, you know, I wanted to hammer away on my piano like you do. It's a kind of caveman instinct, I suppose. And the same with Richard and his drums. You know, he wanted to be hitting his drums rather than playing with a drum machine or something. So, you know, we just got back to playing properly live and, you know, keeping the sound pretty simple.
So tell me again, because you're new and a lot of people don't do the level of research that I do for an interview like this, but I actually heard your stuff on a Fierce Panda sampler. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the best stuff, and it had polyphonic spree and all of that. So tell people the how important and how ridiculously, you know, the Simon Williams is to all of this, because people over here don't know about this.
Yeah, well, you know, Simon Williams is just one of the few kind of classic sort of indie label bosses in the UK. I mean, there are so few labels like that left. I mean, the caliber of the bands that he has discovered and released records for over the last 10 years is just staggering. You know, like you say, the Polyphonic Spree and bands like Ash and Coldplay. Idlewild, and I don't know, all these great bands. And he, for us in particular, I mean, he came along at a time when we were a very low ebb. You know, no one was particularly interested in us. No one knew who we were at all. We did a very small show, which he came to, and he said, you know, I just love the music. I'd like to put out a single for you. And everything for us started from that moment. So, you know, the man is a legend, and in our story he's played a very, very important part.
And then next comes Steve Lamacq, who is again a gentleman that people might have heard about on my show but don't know. So this started to happen, and then...
Yeah, well, just, you know, it's great having a single out. It's always very exciting as a band, but the next step is to actually get people to play it and people to hear it, you know. And Steve Lamacq picked up the record, and he made it his record of the week on his show, which is a very influential show, I would say. You know, he's a very, very well-respected DJ.
Yeah, with that many listeners, you suddenly, when something goes on there and it's his record of the week, I think the word hit suddenly comes into... into play.
Well, you know, I don't know. We just, for us being on the radio at that time was the most exciting thing you could possibly ask for, and just to think that a few thousand people were hearing it.
More than a few thousand, however, I would venture to say.
Yeah, well, you know, that was just again Simon Williams and Steve Lamacq between them basically started everything for us. You know, making a record and playing it on the radio. Yeah, that's what it's all about, really.
So pop music's okay. It's okay to be popular and to play pop music and music that's crafted and music that doesn't purposely go to the left of center. That's okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are quite cynical in the UK about, popularity. I think if you get too popular, people automatically assume that you can't, you know, be a real band and you can't have any credibility. But, you know, for us, we love bands who, those bands who reach out to loads and loads of people. You know, when we were growing up, there were, you know, well, I guess U2 are the classic example in Britain of a band who are writing great songs, great performers, great musicians, a lot of integrity, and yet they're able to reach out to, I don't know, millions of people. I don't even know how many people, you know, but, you know, hugely popular. And I don't know, that's very inspiring. I guess, again, the Beatles are another classic example of a band who've done that, being hugely sort of musical and hugely artistic, and yet also reaching out to a lot of people's hearts.
So this is first tour of the U.S., and we're on the left coast, and I looked on your tour thing, and you're just going to make it all the way across country. So what's yours and the band's feeling, you know, being that you're virtually unknown here to a great extent? Kind of exciting, kind of wild, kind of interested to see what's going to happen?
Yeah, all of those things. I mean, you know, it's we spent ages in the UK trying to get heard, you know, playing tiny clubs. I mean, I can remember playing gigs for literally, you know, two people, and that's not an exaggeration.
But they were excited, those two people.
Well, reasonably, you know what?
As they can be.
Yeah, you know, we did our best, but it's... I don't know, it's always a challenge that. I think we're not one of those bands who are expecting to be playing to stadium-sized crowds every night. It's just not like that. We love playing in small clubs and to, you know, if you've got a handful of people who you can kind of get excited, and it's a challenge to get them interested in the music. I don't know, that's what it's all about, really, and, you know, I hope we can keep doing that for many years to come because we love it.
So are you, I know you can't be tired of it yet, but all the comparisons, people trying to turn around and say, okay, well, they're a mix between Coldplay and so-and-so. So when you read all of that, do you kind of go back and listen to your music and say, are we a mix between?
Yeah, it's confusing sometimes because it's hard to understand what people are getting at. I think normally those sort of comparisons tend to be quite lazy. For me, it's much more interesting when people say, oh, this particular song sounds like early U2, or that one sounds like the Smiths, or sometimes they talk about bands who I don't even really know very well, if at all. So, you know, I think once people actually get more into the music, they realise that there are a lot of different influences, and also that we're very much our own thing. We're trying to make our own sound. We've always felt quite isolated and sort of independent as a band. We're not part of a particular musical movement or whatever in the UK or anywhere else. We just kind of do our own thing and make the music that we like. I don't know. It's, I always expect people to kind of point out things where we have actually basically borrowed an idea or something from one of the bands that we love, but people never seem to actually notice those bits.
Okay, so now I'm gonna try. On the way here, I was listening to Your Eyes Open, and in the intro, I thought I heard a sample of What I Say by Ray Charles, or something that, or a very similar guitar riff to the opening of that. Did I hear that?
No, not deliberately.
There you go. I tried.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool.
It could have synthesized somewhere just in your brain somewhere, having heard it on the radio or something.
I think that's very likely. You know, I love Ray Charles. I think he's an absolute genius.
It wasn't definitive, but that opening riff, it was just a little bit of a sampled riff, and it did sound like it.
There you go.
Interestingly enough.
It's probably lodged in my brain somewhere.
So Keane doesn't really want to be a small indie band. You want to be big, and you want to have your music heard. And that's cool, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, for us, music is such a powerful thing. It's great when you see a band who can really touch people. To be honest, we don't particularly care. I mean, you know, for us, playing to anyone, you know, a few hundred people or a few, you know, reaching a few thousand people with a record or whatever that is massive for us. It's exciting anyway, you know, to feel that, you know, if we can actually affect those people's lives and the way they think and feel, even just a tiny bit, then that's a very special thing. But, you know, by extension, you kind of want to do that for as many people as possible and get that connection going with as many people as possible. We're not ashamed to say, you know, we'd like to reach out to a whole load of people, but we'll have to see how it goes, you know.
Well, it's going well overseas, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
So I asked this two different ways, and I'm going to ask you the first ways because it's kind of fun. You know, I have the joy of having the freedom of playing what I want to play. So I always turn around and say, if you were going to make a Keane musical sandwich, and you were kind of like Keane was the bread, and you could pick two of your songs, and then you could have anything in the middle of it, and I was going to kind of play that guest set and mix it up, and it could pretty much be anything from the realm of popular music, just off the top of your head, what would that sandwich be and what would you build? And then I'm going to play it right after we talk about this. So I mean, not right here, I don't have the turntables, but
what, so like Keane songs and someone else?
It could be, yeah, so a couple of Keane songs and then anything you've always wanted, you know, if you were doing what I was doing and you could have your total choice of anything that would be played, what would you be wanting to listen to next to somebody? What songs and what songs?
Wow. Well, for the Keane songs, I would probably choose a song called We Might As Well Be Strangers, which is one of my favorites on the album, and another one called This Is The Last Time, which I love. And I don't know, for the guts of the sandwich, I don't know. Someone I really love at the moment is Rufus Wainwright.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of. I don't know, maybe one of his like Greek song. Do you know that? I'd love to hear that. Although it would put us to shame a bit, because you know he's such a great songwriter. But there are how many am I allowed?
Oh, as many as you want.
It's a big sandwich.
Oh, it can be a really thick sandwich. You can put cheese and cold cuts and. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll have a bit of Rufus Wainwright. Tiny Spark by Brendan Benson. Do you know him? Song for the Asking by Paul Simon.
Oh, there you go.
I really absolutely adore that song. I don't know, maybe a bit of U2. Maybe something off Acting Baby, like Ultraviolet. The song Idiotech by Radiohead is one of my favorites.
There you go.
From the last few years. Absolutely astounding. I don't know. I feel like Keane doesn't really deserve to be the bread in this particular sandwich, but...
But you do. You get two here, so... And what would be, pick something really odd. You know, now put some mayonnaise or mustard on there that would surprise people.
Some chocolate sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
How about The Man Machine by Kraftwerk?
There you go.
It's one of my favorites.
They just did a remix of one of the Kraftwerk songs, and I forgot which one, but there's a remix that they did of something
the
recently.
The Tour de France one or something.
Yeah.
Do you know, I haven't actually heard it.
I haven't either. I read about it, and now I'm intrigued. So now I'll ask the question a different way. What's playing on the bus?
Well, you know, we only got on the bus yesterday, so...
Did you pack some goodies? Did you pack some stuff to make it through through all this craziness?
Yeah, we've got lots of good records. I've just bought 69 Love Songs by the Magnetic Fields.
Amazing, and his new one's amazing too, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't listened for 69 Love Songs yet. I've been listening for new album, which is great. Someone kindly gave me Whiskey Town's first record, which I'm very much looking forward to listening to. What else have I got? Oh, I don't know. So much great stuff. Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen, which is such a kind of...
That's a songwriter's album.
Yeah, you know, it's a standard which everyone should know, but I'm ashamed to say that I'm not hugely familiar with it, so I'm going to sit down and
It sold a lot less than... It was a harder record to listen to
right.
than a lot of the others, so that's tricky stuff. Last question. Any overseas, strange things that have happened at gigs, you know, and it could be women throwing bizarre things or men throwing bizarre things. Or has there been anything that you never suspected that playing live suddenly that this would occur?
Well, we had, what have we had? We've had like fire alarms going off in the middle of gigs. That was a good one.
Kind of destroys the tone of the music.
Yeah, it's not very helpful, I would have to say. I don't know. We you always have technical problems and people making mistakes, but I don't know. I mean, it's hard to remember. You just get so sort of absorbed in the music that I like the fact that when you're playing a good gig, anything can go wrong and it still kind of doesn't really upset the flow. People are just into it.
This is kind of a bizarre question to ask because it's so early here, but it's not that early back overseas anymore. You know, what, single number three is out already?
I mean, if you include the first Panda singles, which we did two of, then single number four is actually out. But as far as our kind of proper singles come out, as proper singles go, we've done two singles, which have done really well in the UK. And then we had our album come out a couple of weeks ago, which has done amazingly well.
Are you already starting to, in your head, start thinking about the next one and writing and saying to yourself as you're playing these songs over and over, okay, now the next album, we're going to add a glockenspiel, or we're going to...
Yeah, there's a bit of that, I think. I mean, not because we don't love playing these songs. I mean, we really do, and it's...
Well, that shows.
Cool. Well, that's good. I mean, you know, it's incredibly exciting just to be playing those, but... I think you have to think ahead as well, because I don't want to get to a situation where we get a chance to make a second album and then it's right, you know, we have to write a great album. And you can't just do that overnight unless you're...
And people have tried.
The Beatles or something.
People try time and time again. The second album, the sophomore album, everybody's, we'll just live on this. And then the second album comes out and you can tell the couple of songs that had gelled for a while and those that they said... We've got an obligation. We've got to go.
Yeah, we really want to avoid that because you don't want to fall into a trap of just sort of putting out a record because you have to. We want to make a, you know, when the time comes, which I'm sure will be a long way off, we want to be making an album that's, you know, 10 times as good as the first one. Otherwise, you know, what's the point? You might as well retire and be happy with that first album.
Many people should sometimes have thought.
Well,
we're not referring to anybody in particular.
No, we're not naming names, but I think there may be some truth in that. Yeah, and I would hate people to say that about us, so we'll make sure it's a goodie.
Terrific. So the last thing I'm going to ask you to do is we do very, very strange, you know, IDs that we can play over the music.
Okay.
And I always write them because I do write for a living also, and this is not a typical one. This is just really dumb. But it shows kind of the joy in you know, getting together and talking about the music.
Okay, I'm just wondering what email address we can put. What can we put band@keenmusic.com, I think it is.
I think that's what's on your website.
Is that right?
I think so.
Would it be safe for me to say email us at our website or something?
Yeah, that's fine, because they can go to the website.
I don't
want
to send someone the wrong email address. Cool. Hello, this is Tim from Keen. We've never listened to Dennis the Menace's radio show, but he claims to be the first one to play our record in San Francisco. Would you please email us at our website and tell us if he really is keen on our music? I can't believe he actually got us to say that.
Beautiful.